Yes, we welcome you back inside the program. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online at wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road in Muncie and online at wallsfurniture.com. As we are glad to be joined by Pat Boylan from the Pacers and Fever Networks. One of the busier weeks you've had in this role, Pat. Describe what the last, 72 hours have been from Sunday, the Pacers clinching the sixth seed, to knowing that, you know, Monday's coming and 10,000 or more packed in Gainbridge Fieldhouse to watch the WNBA draft, to, you know, the last 2 days and to today, the introduction. Like, what have the last 4 days been like for you?
Yeah, what's today, Wednesday? I'm losing track here. But it's funny because Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, last 5 days there's been one basketball game, and yet it's probably been my busiest stretch of the year. Obviously, Sunday was massive from a Pacers perspective. You had to win it to clinch a playoff berth and to avoid playing in the play-in tournament, to avoid having games on Tuesday and Wednesday, and to lock yourself into a spot that you've set yourself up for all season long, and really back-to-back massive Sundays, the one before against Miami and then the one just a couple of days ago. You go through two games on Sundays where you beat Miami to set yourself and put yourself up on the doorstep of clinching, and then you actually do clinch on Sunday. And actually, if you go back and just look at that game against Miami a week and a half ago, if the Pacers lose it and you take a win away from Indiana and add a loss, and then you add a win to Miami and take away a loss and then give Miami tiebreak, the Pacers are playing in the play-in tournament, and they're the eighth seed, and they're about to play tonight in Philadelphia. So that's how big Sunday night was. Monday, the WNBA draft for the Fever, where Clark goes number one overall. We had over 6,000 people in the building watching along the first couple. The lower level and the Krieg DeVault club level were almost entirely full. And then today we had our introductory press conference with Caitlin Clark. And so she was officially welcomed to Indianapolis this morning and met and spoke with media and got her jersey and all of that. So I'm happy to take this discussion and start it in any direction you want. We've sort of been all over the place, but it's for very, very good reason. You know, I was saying this on the podcast that we do. The Pacers have had deep playoff runs. The Fever have had deep playoff runs. So individually, you can argue that from an on-court perspective, each team has had more important days. But when you combine the Pacers clinching a playoff berth and then drafting Caitlin Clark within 30 hours of each other, one of the best days for the two franchises combined, one of the best stretches for the two franchises combined, I think, in a long, long time, maybe ever. And so a lot of excitement around the building, I think, is a good way to sum it up.
Pat, you and I have had a lot of Pacers discussions over the years, going back to high school, as we mentioned, going to Carmel High School and talking about those things. I mentioned this yesterday, and I wanted to ask you this. Did your family do what my family did back in the 90s when the Pacers had those playoff series and at what was Conseco at the time, same venue, just different name? They would have the game on in on the scoreboard. My family brought me to Conseco at the time to go watch those games, even though the game wasn't happening. And like, the reason I bring that up, did you do that as in elementary school, whatever the case may be? And secondly, with that expectation of knowing what Pacers fans would do in that moment and go to the arena just to watch it, even though they're not playing there, did that prepare Gainbridge Fieldhouse for expecting 6,000, 7,000 plus to just watch on the big screen the WNBA draft?
You know, maybe I got to go back and slap my parents on the wrist, because no, we did not do that. And in hindsight, it sounds like something that I would have enjoyed. And I think that's what makes what happened on Monday so impressive, right? Because the draft is not, if the draft were taking place on the floor of Gainbridge Fieldhouse, that's one thing. You can go out there and watch it actually happen. But no, these were fans who came to watch the draft on the video board with other fans. And it's a cool experience, don't get me wrong, but it's a Monday. School's still in session. You got to drive downtown if you're in the suburbs. I mean, really, just think about it pragmatically. The easy thing to do on Monday night would have been to say, hey, I want to watch the draft. I want my kids to watch it with me. Let's go order a pizza, sit down in front of the TV and watch it. So to commit, yes, tickets were free, but to commit to drive downtown, maybe 30 minutes from the suburbs if you're there, to go into the arena and, you know, maybe purchase dinner at the arena, to sit there and watch the draft from the seats, and then to go you know, back to your car and to drive 30 minutes back to wherever you might live, that's a fairly big ask on a Monday night, considering you're still watching the draft on TV. It's still on the TV. It's just the big video board at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And so I thought that's, you know, one of the areas that made Monday night so impressive is it's not surprising, and we're learning this very, very quickly, it's not surprising that there's a demand to see Caitlin Clark, but to see the demand that there was to watch Caitlin Clark on TV from Gainbridge Fieldhouse, I think, is just a precursor for just the fever pitch, for lack of a better phrase, no pun intended, toward what the fan base is feeling. And to be frank here, not just the fan base, completely new fans that didn't previously watch the WNBA or watch the Fever, or maybe very casually did, and are now getting it at a much more interested level. I think that's what you're seeing here since Caitlin Clark was drafted on Monday, and really earlier than that, when she committed to coming to the WNBA and she announced that she was going to be foregoing that COVID season, that's when you really started to see the interest picked up, because everybody could put two and two together knowing the Fever had the number one pick.
Well, I bring all that up, Pat, because I told the story the other day on Tuesday that we had some family in those years that the Pacers made those deep runs in the 90s from North Dakota and Minnesota. And you know, I was so young, I was so into the game, I really didn't watch my family members' reaction to us bringing them with us to Conseco Fieldhouse to watch it on the video board. But I can only imagine, to people outside of the Midwest, like, I don't know, and it's not to compare other markets, but I don't know if this happens in larger markets with Caitlin Clark, because it's different. But I, you know, when I saw the arena and you were there, you know, taking videos, doing some emceeing and those sorts of things, like, I saw the video and I saw the pictures and I shrugged my shoulders and I'm like, you know what, in any other area than Indiana, it'd probably be like, wow, this is ridiculous, this is crazy. But like, because of basketball around here and what's been done before, like mentioned with those 90s Pacers and watching it on the video board, it was kind of like, oh, it's kind of a look back in time. This still happens, and it kind of all fits in a weird way. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, and I think when you look at, I think that probably is more a byproduct of not being in a big market too. And when you look at, you know, this is the Indiana fan base is one that I think is obviously very passionate, knows its basketball very well, but also one that wears a chip on its shoulder, because you don't often hear, unless, you know, something specifically demands it, you hear about LA teams and New York teams and maybe Chicago teams and Miami teams, but there's a chip on their shoulder, I think, for a lot of fans here that are like, hey, you know, we've done some pretty good stuff from the Colts and the Fever and the Pacers perspective over the years that warrants attention too. And so when there are these moments, you know, it's why Lance Stephenson was so popular. And Reggie Miller was so popular twofold. He was an incredible basketball player, but he had such a passion for knocking off the Knicks and such a passion for bringing Indiana up a notch in terms of notoriety and the spotlight that they're getting. And Lance Stephenson was never afraid to back down to a bigger, more high-profile opponent. And I think some of that's in play here, too. Oh, my goodness, Indiana has now the biggest women's basketball star in the history of the sport, and that's pretty cool. And we're going to rally around that because, you know, we haven't always had the spotlight in certain times, just not being a major city. And here we are with the biggest player in the history of the game, and we're going to come out for that, and we're going to celebrate that. And I think we're just getting started here. I mean, yeah. I don't know that, you know, exactly what the ticket numbers look like. That's not my job, and I haven't asked specifically. But all you have to do is go to opening night, Fever opening night, and go to the single game tickets, which are on sale now, feverbasketball.com. And if you click the button for resale, which takes the resale tickets off of the page and only shows you what we have left to be sold in our inventory, I mean, you're talking about scattered tickets throughout a 17,000+ seat arena. I would expect that's going to sell out. And I would expect we maybe do that multiple times. We're not talking about, like, a previous Fever sellout would mean the first two bowls are full. The balcony was blocked off. I'm talking about balcony open sellout coming this way less than a month.
Yeah. Yeah. That's some crazy stuff right there. It's Pat Boylan from the Pacers and Fever Networks with us on the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Last one on this, because clearly as we go through the next couple of weeks and the Fever begin in the middle of May, we'll certainly talk more about this. But here's a couple of things that people need to be prepared for Caitlin Clark. And the first one, she had a quote about her college head coach, Lisa Bluter. And it was just glowingly about how she appreciates her Iowa coach being able to coach her hard through everything that she went through. I thought, A, that is a great sign that, again, somebody like her that's very open, very outspoken, all those different things, going back to the, hey, I still want to be coached hard. I want to get better. I want to do my thing. And clearly she gets to this point, obviously. That's a huge deal. So that's number one. Number two, do you feel like a lot of people do, that her playmaking as a passer is going to, be an easier transition earlier than maybe the physicality shooting portion of the game? Or how do you feel about the translation from college game to the WNBA game?
Yeah, you know what? It's never a sure thing, but when you have an athlete like this, and especially if you look at the history of the women's game, typically players that are, if you were to put the cat, and she's above this category, but if you were to just say maybe the most hyped number one pick over a five-year stretch, that player almost always translates to being an all-star. That's just how women's basketball historically has worked. In the time that I've been here, Asia Wilson and Brianna Stewart are probably the two biggest ones, and those are the two best players in the game right now. And Clark's on that level too, in terms of she's above that level in terms of the type of prospect that she is, and of course the type of spotlight that she brings with her. So I think, to be honest with you, I think her whole game translates really well right away. Now, don't confuse that with me saying that I think she's going to put up an average of 30-15 in her first WNBA season. It's harder. There is a big step up in athleticism and a big step up in speed, and it's the 144 best women athletes in the world that play basketball. So, yes, adjustment for sure. But if I were to pick one thing, I would pick the passing. But in general, I think her game's just going to translate really well. She's extremely intelligent. She can shoot the ball from the moon. She's got size, so it's going to be really tough to, she'll probably want to continue to add strength. But in terms of just putting somebody who's 5 or 6 inches taller than her, that's going to be hard to do because she's got a lot of size herself. And here's the other thing that she has. And I mean this in no way to denigrate anybody that she was with at Iowa, because she was drafted. There have been two other Iowa players that have been drafted during her time, and another Gabby Marshall that probably wasn't that far away. So I don't mean to say she hasn't had quality around her, but she's also going to gain a ton of that quality too. And she's never played with anybody anywhere, anything like Aaliyah Boston. She and Aaliyah Boston, I think, are going to come in right away day one and pair really, really well together. And so are there going to be adjustments? Yes. But she's also got assets that she's never had before. Melissa Smith was arguably the best player in college basketball 2 years ago. When Caitlin Clark was going on her rarefied air scoring spree where she was passing all the top scorers in the history of the game, one of those names near the top that she passed just before passing Kelsey Plum and Pistol Pete was Kelsey Mitchell. And now she's got Kelsey Mitchell as a teammate. And I think what a lot of people might not realize is, yes, the Fever were 13-27 a year ago, but they were 13-27 with a rookie all-star starter, a shooting guard in Kelsey Mitchell, who also was an all-star, a nice up-and-coming, promising big in Nalissa Smith or four in Nalissa Smith. So the cupboard isn't dry here. She's not walking into a situation where it's like, oh, gosh, are they going to be able to put talent around me? She's going to have a lot day number one, and I think that's going to help her translate a whole lot as well.
It's Pat Boylan from the Pacers and Fever Networks. Of course, a big week with Caitlin Clark officially a member of the Indiana Fever, but also the preparations for the Pacers' first playoff series in four seasons as they face off against Milwaukee, Indiana the 6 seed, Milwaukee the 3 seed. Let's look at, in totality, the regular season that this team put together, Pat, and then we'll get to the matchup here that has a lot of storylines attached for obvious reasons. You know, Rick Carlisle at the end of the game on Sunday was talking about the philosophy of this franchise, and again, in some ways, kind of this being a step that they don't just want to compete for playoff spots, they want to compete for championships, and that's why he came here, and all those sorts of things. With your talks with Coach and being around this team, you know, the battle to get a playoff spot, do they feel like this year they have a real opportunity to not just compete in the playoffs, but maybe make some noise, win a series, get further than people may think on the outside?
No doubt. No doubt. That's absolutely the message. It's absolutely the mantra. It's absolutely the theme inside of practice. And look, if that doesn't happen, if this first round ends up being a disappointing playoff venture for the Pacers, you'll be able to go back and look at this season and say, look, this team went from not even making the play-in tournament to not even needing the play-in tournament to make the playoffs. I think they've already achieved a level that is greater than I think what was expected of them and what the expected next step was. And you can't take that away from them. That'll be there even if this series does not go well. But the East is wide open. Outside of Boston, there's not a game or a team that I think you can definitively say that team is definitely even a second-round team, let alone an Eastern Conference Finals team. The Bucks specifically, that series is it's so unique here because this is a Milwaukee team. I mean, think about where these two teams were a year ago today. Milwaukee, now a little over a year ago because the playoffs started about a week earlier last year. But essentially at this point last year, the Pacers players were starting their vacations and the Milwaukee players were coming off of a recent championship and they were the number one overall seed and they were cruising all year long and they had all the confidence in the world. Now, we know they were upended by Miami. We know how their story ended last year. But fast forward a year ahead, and you've got a Pacers team that's in the playoffs without needing the play-in tournament with a lot of confidence, and you got a Bucks team that's kind of been stumbling all year long, and they changed coaches, and then they really struggled initially with Doc Rivers, and then they really got it going, and it was like, okay, the ship's righted here, and then you look at their last 3 weeks, and it's been kind of more stumbling and floundering from Milwaukee, and I think they've lost 8 of 11 here going in to game number one. So it's a dramatic change for both of these teams as you enter the first game here. And the predominant storyline and maybe the most important thing in this whole series is going to be the health of Giannis. And as a Pacers reporter, I don't know the health of Giannis. I also can read the Woj tweets like everybody else and know, you know, that it at least a possibility that he misses at least a game. And that's, you know, a huge break for Indiana if it happens. But at the end of the day, I think their biggest challenge is going to be experience. They got some with Pascal Siakam. That's important. They have other guys on the roster like Miles Turner and TJ McConnell that have played in playoff games. But a lot of this Bucks core, even if they don't have Giannis, was a part of that core that won a championship. And Damian Lillard, while he hasn't won one, has carried teams on deep playoff runs on his shoulders before. And so that's probably the biggest area that the Pacers have to overcome. But I think this is a team that feels like this series is winnable if Giannis is 100%. And if he's not, you know, it's probably only advantage Indiana even more. But are they like we were answering a question recently, are they the favorites even if Giannis doesn't play for some of the series? And I just don't know. It's hard to say that when the other team is home court advantage because it's a massive advantage in the playoffs. But I do think this thing is wide open, and not just this round, but the teams that win on the non-Boston side of the bracket are probably going to feel pretty good.
Yeah, very, very even series coming up. And Pat, you kind of alluded to it a moment ago. While, you know, the news of Giannis likely being out for the beginning of this series was met with, the Pacers can walk into Milwaukee, win the first couple of games. I looked at it a different way and said, you know what? It's not exactly been the perfect fit with Giannis and Damian Lillard this season as expected. They're still a top three seed. That being the case, you know, it sounds ridiculous to say that Milwaukee's really, really dangerous without Giannis. You're talking about one of the top three players in the world. That being said, with Damian Lillard, they're going to operate differently from an offensive style. And as we've seen in the playoffs, guards that can, you know, beat you from the perimeter, and if Lillard gets hot, knocks down five, six, seven threes like he's done many times in undermatched Portland teams in the Western Conference, like, you know, the Pacers aren't going to be, you know, aren't going to sit back and say, oh my gosh, Giannis isn't playing, we're in great position. But is there a danger that you really haven't seen Milwaukee play large stretches and important stretches with a Damian Lillard bomb attack that you might be expecting coming up on Sunday and beyond?
Well, as it relates to that, I think the biggest danger would be if you come into it as from a mindset of, if Giannis doesn't play, we've got ourselves a much easier game. That can't be the mindset that you come into it, because in games where Giannis has not played this year, Damian Lillard is averaging over 30 points and he's averaging 8 assists. So he's more than capable of raising his game to another level when Giannis isn't there. And yes, I mean, I don't disagree with anything that you said there in terms of analyzing the Bucks and the Pacers and strengths and weaknesses and all of that. And so I think the only danger is if you allow the outside noise, which has been, you know, kind of oddly pro-Pacers here. The Pacers have been a trendy pick nationally, and the more Giannis injury news that comes out, the more trendy that's become. And I think if you fall in love with that idea as a player, or the coaching staff wouldn't do that, but as a player, then you risk, I think, the edge that is necessary here. Because I think, like, if you say the Pacers go into Milwaukee game number one and they play, a B or B minus brand of basketball, in game one of the playoffs, and even if Giannis isn't there, that might not be good enough to get it done. What I'm getting at is, even if Giannis isn't there, I think you're going to have to leave game one feeling like you really played well to win it. That environment's going to be raucous. They still got plenty of talent over there. They still got plenty of experience over there. And if you were to say, well, Tyrese Halliburton was so-so and Pascal Siakam was so-so and they didn't have Giannis, that's potentially still a formula that wins the Bucks game number one. So I think you have to approach it as a player as if Giannis is there and as if this team is at full health and has been playing well lately. And, you know, if you can take advantage of his absence, great. It's an advantage for Indiana, no doubt. If the Pacers could pick, they will choose no Giannis. But
right,
that doesn't mean that it's simply a walk in the park because of it.
Yeah, no, and that's the hard part when you try to break it down and say, you know, hey, they're still dangerous, and it kind of comes across, and fans are like, well, are you saying that they're dangerous without Giannis? And the fact of the matter is, I think this is why Milwaukee went and acquired Damian Lillard, not anticipating Giannis wouldn't be available, but, you know, if the situation occurs that they still have somebody that can take over a game like both of these guys are capable of doing. Speaking of taking over games, you know, I know last week we talked a lot about style of play when, you know, you're broadcasting coming up on Sunday in this series, and we don't know style of play and the usage and all the different things with, you know, Halliburton and how many shots he's going to take, and you shorten the bench and all those different things. Are you just as fascinated as maybe a fan is to see how the Pacers adapt what made them successful in the regular season and how they're going to adapt that for the postseason, as we kind of talked about last week?
Yeah, and I think exactly how that looks is a fascinating question, because you went 4-1 against Milwaukee while you were still playing that kind of breakneck style of basketball that the Pacers did dial down just a little bit, although not every game. We remember the 150-145 Lakers game, and the Pacers just put up 147. So it's not to suggest they can't do that. But, like, I think what the Pacers found is their best brand of basketball was playing fast but not breakneck, because fast – allowed their defense to get set, allowed them to not maybe waste quite as much energy and be able to use it on the defensive end. And the Pacers defensively in the back half of the season, they weren't good, but they were much improved. And I think that was massive in the Pacers ultimately locking up a playoff berth and not needing the play-in tournament to do so. And so, you know, what do? Do you try to go back to maybe what worked against Milwaukee, or do you try to use the style that's in general led to more success? It's no secret that the Bucks are an older team, and Giannis is maybe the best transition player in the world. So you move him out of the mix, and yes, Lillard is still quick and very good, but there maybe is something there. On the flip side, you have to be able to defend to win playoff series, and as good as the Pacers were against Milwaukee, they weren't always defending at a very high level during those points in the season too. So it's a fascinating question. It's one that, you know, I don't have the basketball mind for to know. I'm sure there is a game plan that's being concocted, and, you know, you always see playoff adjustments. If the Pacers did try to play faster and then it didn't go well because they don't defend, well, that's a potential adjustment for game number two. But, you know, to kind of sum up this series, the point we were just talking about, like, I don't think there's a team in the Eastern Conference besides Boston that can win a playoff series without feeling like they played really well. I just think that's how close this all is right now. And I think Boston is good enough, although they might play Philadelphia or Miami, so it might not even be true for them. But Boston is good enough that I think they could play the B level of their game and move on. I don't think anybody else can say that. So Giannis, no Giannis, the Pacers have to be on top of their game to win this series, to win game one, to advance in the playoffs for sure.
What do the next 3 days look like for you, Pat, after what you just said over the last 72 hours or so?
You know, I've actually I've added in a freelance assignment. So for anybody watching Big Ten Network, I'm going to help with their coverage of the IU spring game coming up tomorrow, which will be enjoyable. But we're still working out the plans. My hope is to be up in Milwaukee for the first couple of games. It's always a little challenging. I don't normally travel. I'm in the studio for the road games. But so do they have the space? Does PR for Milwaukee have enough space to have two sideline reporters? It's something we're working out on right now. My hope is to be up there, but if not, we'll have the same coverage here for you in the next few days of Pacers and Bucks. We've got Pacers Weekly on our flagship, which airs on Saturday mornings too. So at least for the next few days, we go into all Pacers mode here. There's a very slight break, I think, from Caitlin Clark mania and Fever mania to where there will be 100% focus on this playoff series. But once you get into May, the first game's May 14th. Right. So training camp is around the corner, and the lack of the WNBA is only, you know, another week or two along. And then my hope, Mark, is that we're having conversations each week where we're talking about both of these teams here for the foreseeable future. So-